Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. And by Bisquick Heart Smart Pancake and Baking Mix. With 0 grams trans fat and no cholesterol, Bisquick Heart Smart Pancakes are a delicious way to be good to your heart. Bisquick, real pancakes, real good.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. It's been darn cold out there, even with all the scarves and the wool sweaters and the long underwear that we have, and even the down jackets and the insulated warm weather, warm, cold weather clothing that they didn't have way back when Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay climbed Mount Everest in 1953, and here we are, and we have it, and we're still cold, even just walking a few blocks down Main Street towards the Chatterbox Cafe. We have no mountain to climb, but we're shivering when we walk in. It's beautiful out there, especially when you see it out the windows of the Chatterbox Cafe. Winter. It was a beautiful big full moon the other night and that aura around it that they call a moon dog. The big news in the Chatterbox Cafe was that Carl Krebsbach Jr. went through the ice even on that cold, cold night a few nights ago. He was walking out towards his fish house around midnight, and he went through both legs, right up to his waist. He went through. There are a lot of springs out there, and they keep the water roiled up, and sometimes the ice can be thin, even when it's 20 below zero, which it was. He went through, and then he pulled himself out, and he knew he had to get to the fish house before he froze to death. He ran towards the fish house, which was about a quarter mile away, on legs that felt like tree stumps. He dashed over there, and he pulled out a match, and he turned on the propane in the stove, and he lit it, and the flame burst up, and the stove went on right about the time his hands were shaking so badly that he couldn't have held a match in them. He just barely made it. That boy just put his head down and he cried as hard as he could, and he could feel the tears freezing in little beads on his cheek. He's 24 years old. It's a turbulent age. He graduated from the College of St. Joseph with a major in studio arts, which prepares you for large emotional moments. He came back home and they gave him a house that had been in the family, an old farmhouse, an old wreck of a farmhouse to live in, so he settled out there. He was making drawings. He made a book called Transcendent Upheavals, which was a beautiful book. He sent it around to 25 publishers, and it was rejected by everybody, and then the 26th publisher never returned it, and by that time he was tired of it himself. He played in a rock and roll band and sang, a band called Savage Psyche, and then was pulled over by Gary and Leroy, the constables, for drunken driving. And at that point, his father had a conversation with him, Carl Jr., whose nickname is Chip, and he went to work at Krebsbach's Chev, even though he had no interest whatsoever in cars. Nonetheless, he was pumping gas. And then they brought in the self-service pumps, and so he was put to work in the storeroom doing inventory. His grandpa's been trying to get him to go to commercial college and get a degree in accounting, but this is a romantic boy, and that's what his upheaval was this last week. The girl of his dreams, the woman he loved, had come and gone, and he wasn't sure if she would ever come back. He met her down in Minneapolis at the old folks' home, the Spanish Gardens nursing home, where his Aunt Barbara was a resident. The girl's name was Maria. She was tall and elegant and beautiful. She was from Venice. She was Italian, working as an aide in the old folks' home. And that day, Chip became devoted to his Aunt Barbara and visited her every day and spent hours there playing Scrabble with her, even though she's lost her mind and none of the words make sense anymore, just for the sight of that tall, beautiful woman walking through the door, woman with the walk and the Italian talk coming through the door. He courted her. He threw himself at her. He wrote songs for her. He wrote long letters for her. He had all these feelings inside him. He'd never been able to tell anybody before, and suddenly there she was. She was the recipient of all of his tenderness that he had been saving up in this town that doesn't really believe in romance. Like Dorothy said down at the Chatterbox Cafe, if you're going to fall in love, why not just save your time and just set your house on fire and get the same amount of drama and cause less damage? It's a town that doesn't really believe in romance. Bell bottoms never caught on in Lake Wobegon. The lava lamp, the tango never was big there. But people, we enjoy watching nonetheless. We like to watch other people do this. And so when Maria was invited to come visit Chip in Lake Wobegon, everybody was sort of excited about this. He spent 2 days cleaning and painting that house and arranging his books and art materials so as to give the best possible impression of himself. And then at the very last minute, he asked his mother if it was all right if Maria would stay with his parents in town and not come out with him in the farmhouse, evidently worried that if he asked her to, she might say no. And so that's what she did. People in town were curious about that. Why? They watched them closely, this tall, beautiful young woman in the black coat walking the streets of Lake Wobegon with this slender young man with the long hair tied in a little ponytail in back, the mark of an artist, walking the streets. Why didn't they hold hands? People were wondering. Why didn't he kiss her? They were watching him. He took her arm to help her over the piles of ice and snow at the end of the sidewalk. Why didn't he put his arm around her? Why this hesitation? He was in love. Obviously he was. You could see it in his face. For weeks and weeks before, women, when they are in love, they have a beatific look. They shine, their faces shine. They look like Botticelli painted them. Men look stupid. They look as if somebody had hit them over the head with a baseball bat. But you could tell that he was deeply in love. Why when he took her out to the fish house, why didn't they stay out there longer? People wondered. We were watching. There was a kiss. The kiss the last day that she was there in front of the Chatterbox Cafe, he turned and he kissed her. They were waiting for her ride to come. Her father was going to come pick her up. But why didn't they talk? They stood there silently, and then she got into the car and she drove away. And his heart was broken. And that's when he walked out across the ice late at night and went through where the springs bubble up. And he almost died out there. This is a town that is skeptical about romance because we just are cautious, that's all. We were brought up to be cautious on account of winter, probably. And on account of the scripture stories that we were taught as children, which were not stories from musical comedy. They were stories about serious consequences. I believed in love when I was a kid, but more in writing than in actual life. I wrote a story in which a young woman was in love with me, and she addressed me as sweet darling, which nobody ever did in real life. My sister called me Pencil Neck, and she got hold of that story, and she read that out loud to her friends, and they shrieked with laughter at somebody in love with me and putting her arm around me in the story and saying they loved me, loved me, loved me, and please do that again, do that again. Oh, they laughed and they laughed and they laughed. I listened to them laughing. And then I wrote another story. You should never offend a writer because we will come back at you. I wrote a story in which my sister saw me kissing a girl who called me sweet darling. And I was slow dancing with her, and I had my hand in the small of her back. And my sister got on her bike, and she pedaled as fast as she could down the road to tell my parents that I was dancing, which was wrong. And she was so eager to get home, she didn't see the truck coming. And the truck ran right over her and flattened her and made a terrible mess. And she went up to heaven. And heaven was cool and beautiful. And Jesus said hello to her. And how was your trip up and everything? And she said, well, I'm really, really happy to be here. But, I mean, how come my brother gets away with all of this stuff? Why doesn't somebody crack down on him? And Jesus said, and it sounds to me like somebody's kind of angry. And she said, no, I'm not angry. I just, you know, wonder why he gets away with everything and he gets to go on living. And here I get struck by a truck. I mean, where's the fairness there? And then suddenly she was in a different place. She wasn't in heaven anymore. She was in a waiting room and you sat there and it took 150 years and all she had was the sports section of the Minneapolis paper to read. And the want ads, and every 10 minutes, a nurse came in and said, it'll just be a little bit longer. Well, my sister read that, and she thought that was blasphemous to put words in Jesus' mouth like that. And yet it stung her to the quick just to read that, and I put something in her mind. See, that's the revenge of a writer. It's a town in which romance is a little bit scarce, and most romances, if the truth be told, are arranged romances in a way. You wind up persuading yourself that you are in love with somebody who is the person your parents would have picked out for you. There's not a lot of impulsive romance. Sometimes we wish there were. We see those young people standing around at the time of the high school prom, and the boys stand around in black tie, all talking to other penguins, and then the girls stand around like swans, like egrets, like tropical birds in their pastels, their strapless gowns, all of the flamingos together and the penguins, and you just want one of the penguins to come over and talk to a flamingo and dance with her and put his arm in the small of her back so that she'd call him sweet darling. But we don't see it happening. I was in California a couple of weeks ago, and I came back and was telling Clint Bunsen about it, and he said, you know, I always wanted to live in California. He said, I was going to live in California. In fact, he was in California. He was stationed in the Navy in California. He loved it in California. And then he came back to Lake Wobegon to say goodbye and to clean out his stuff. And his sort of girlfriend, Irene, who he'd been sort of writing to for a couple of years, said, why didn't you write to me more often? I wrote you many more letters than you wrote to me. He said, well, I was busy having a good time in California. She said, well, maybe I would have liked to have had a good time in California too. It went on like that, and she made him feel so guilty, he married her to make her feel better. And it turned out that she didn't want to go to California. She wanted to stay in Lake Wobegon with her family, who drive her nuts. So there is their marriage. He'd never told me that before. He's just a little bit ambivalent about it. He loves her, but there's just a little bit of ambivalence. Is that a bad thing? Well, yes and no, but he told me the story, and then he told me how proud he was of his daughter, who went to Seattle because she'd never been there. So she went there. And she'd never had oysters on the half shell, so she had them. And she met an oyster man and fell in love with him. And oysters really are an aphrodisiac. And she came back home and she told her mother she was moving to Seattle because she was in love with this tall, silent man who went out and got oysters every morning out of the sea. And her mother said, "You're not going to go anyplace until you clean your room." And the girl left that very next morning with hardly a word of farewell. She took off for Seattle, leaving behind this swamp of clothing and plates of old food and crusted things and books you didn't even want to know what they were. And Clint Bunsen was so proud. He cleaned his daughter's room for her and shoveled it all into green lawn bags and put it in the garage. And she went off to Seattle, where she's given up eating raw oysters because she's pregnant. She lives with her oyster man love there in a little white house on a high hill overlooking the sea. He never hears from her at all. This so often happens with children when they're happy. They simply disappear. But she's a love story, and he thinks of her over and over and over again. Go away. Go away. Get the richness of life. Embrace it, and then figure out the rest later. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.
The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is brought to you by Bisquick Heart Smart Pancake and Baking Mix. With 0 grams trans fat and no cholesterol, Bisquick Heart Smart Pancakes are a delicious way to be good to your heart. Bisquick, real pancakes, real good.